Ever heard of a popcorn-driven robot? This week on Meat & Three, we're bringing you stories about the intersection of food and tech.
We're interested in building swarms of many cheap, small robots and powering them and driving them forward with as little effort and as little energy as possible.
We cover tech by land.
Imagine if you could cut fresh microgreens onto your salad and eat it while the greens are still fresh and nutritious and delicious and alive. That dream is real.
We cover tech by sea.
We're building software-based business services to help shellfish growers manage and grow their business.
And we cover tech in the social media stratosphere.
So it's not really necessarily an indictment on food media or media consumption at all. It's how the robots decided that they were going to weight human interaction.
Tune in and get techie this week on Meat & Three, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Bomb Squad. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we bring the best conversations with women in and around the world of food to you. We have two great interviews for you today, but first, let's thank our sponsors. If you are daydreaming about culinary school, maybe it's time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplôme, by visiting cordonbleu.edu. Bob's Red Mill is an employee-owned company that has been offering organic, gluten-free, and stone-ground products for decades. With Bob's Red Mill, you're not just getting quality, you're getting flavor-packed ingredients that taste amazing. Visit bobsredmill.com today and use the code CHERRY25 for 25% off your order. Very generous of the Bob's folks, so thank you. Again, visit bobsredmill.com and use the code CHERRY25 for 25% off your order. Some Cherry Bomb housekeeping. Our new issue is out, featuring cover girl Nigella Lawson. You can order it via cherrybomb.com and take advantage of our free shipping offer going on right now. Or you can pick up the Nigella issue from one of our stockists, like McNally Jackson, one of my favorite bookstores in the world. McNally has locations in Manhattan and Williamsburg, so be sure to visit if you are in New York City. I will be in Austin on Sunday, Austin, Texas, for our Future of Food tour. The event is sold out, but we're recording it for a future episode of Radio Cherry Bomb. Thanks to everyone who has DM'd me their dining recommendations. We'll be hitting as many places as we can squeeze in, and I'll be sure to share them all on Instagram. You can follow along at Cherry Bomb. And I have dinner reservation for Sunday night at Kristen Kish's Arlo Gray restaurant, and I'm super excited about that. Also, Cherry Bomb's first week-long celebration of ice cream is underway over at cherrybomb.com. It's called CB Scoop, and we're featuring our favorite makers, flavors, trends, cookbooks, and more, so be sure to check it out. We'll also have some bonus content on Cherry Bomb's Instagram. One thing we need your help with, we are putting together the ultimate guide to the best female-fueled scoop shops across the country. So if you know of any, please DM us to nominate them. We'll unveil the list on Tuesday, and it is going to be major. It's been a lot of fun working on the CB Scoop project. I've learned about some incredible women and some very interesting ice cream flavors. You ready for this one? Nashville Hot Chicken. That is an actual ice cream flavor at Hattie Jane's, which has two locations in Tennessee. I think that is worthy of a road trip right there. All right, so it's an exciting day at Radio Cherry Bomb because we have interviews with not one, but two CEOs for you. Later in the show, we'll hear from Christine Barone, a former Starbucks executive who is now the CEO of True Food Kitchen, a chain of 23 fast casual restaurants in 10 different states. True Food Kitchen is so hot right now. Guess who invested in the company and joined its board? Ready? Oprah. That's pretty hot, right? First, we will be talking to Dinah Trout, the CEO and co-founder of HealthAid Kombucha. Dinah was working in the pharmaceutical business when she and her husband and her best friend launched their kombucha brand at a local farmer's market. It was an instant hit, but the overnight success was a bit costly in the form of drained savings and maxed out credit cards. But the kombucha crew turned it around, and their beloved brew is now found in tons of locations around the across the country. I love this product and their story, so I'm very excited to talk to Dinah. She's on the phone right now, so I'd like to welcome Dinah Trout to Radio Cherry Bomb. Hi, Dinah.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
And by the way,
how are you?
I'm pretty good, actually. I feel like I'm losing my voice. I'm not sure why, but aside from that, I'm great. I'm, like I said, super happy to talk to you. Dinah has taken over our Instagram stories today at Cherry Bomb Mag, so be sure to go look at it and see what Dinah is up to. And for those of you who are part of like the cult that loves Health Aid, I'm a part of that cult. You know that Dinah's her hair color changes from time to time. So I was very excited, first off, to see what your hair color is today. And it's not pink.
It's not, but almost not by choice. It's just I had a vacation where I spent a lot of time in the water. And so it sort of faded. And so now I'm in this blondish phase. So natural.
So knowing how hard you work, I know that was a very well-deserved vacation. Before we get into the Health Aid story, I want to blow people's minds a little bit if indeed what I was told by Lauren Goldstein, who was part of the Cherry Bomb crew, is true. And the word SCOBY is an acronym, like scuba? Is that true?
Yes.
What does SCOBY stand for?
Symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast.
Okay, I had absolutely no idea, and I've been drinking kombucha for years. Can you say that one more time?
Sure. So SCOBY is SCOBY, and it stands for Symbiotic Culture of Bacteria and Yeast.
Okay, that's amazing. So for those people out there who haven't had kombucha yet and who don't know what kombucha is and don't know what the hell SCOBY means, can you explain the whole kombucha process to them?
Sure. So kombucha is fermented tea, and it's naturally rich in probiotics and organic healthy acids, kind of like an ancient soda. Even the bubbles are naturally made. And basically how it's made is you take sweet tea and you add this SCOBY, this culture, on top. The culture is not too different from what's used in making real water kefir, real even dairy kefir, real yogurt, real sourdough bread even. Basically, the culture is the home to the probiotics. And when you put that culture on top of sugar, and in this case, it's the sugar and the sweet tea, it will eat that sugar, and over a fermentation period, over a time period where it basically sits, that liquid transforms, much like grape juice transforms into wine, tea, sweet tea, transforms into kombucha. So the liquid is no longer like a tea at all. It's acidic, it's a little bit sour, it's a little bit sweet, it's chock full of all those probiotics, and then it's also got a bubble, a little bit of bubbliness to it. So it kind of tastes like, I don't know, like a juicy non-alcoholic beer, but soda mixed. It's really, really delicious. And you do become addicted, and that's why there's like a cult following.
Juicy is a good way to describe that. I also love ancient soda. I can see the tagline, like ancient soda, yeah. Made fresh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people, a lot of nutritionists, like especially the hippy dippy ones, that believe that the reason we're so attracted as humans to carbonated foods or carbonated beverages is because back in the day, it indicated that those were fermented. And fermented foods were, one, not only safe, because that's a way to preserve foods and keep them safe from foodborne illness, but it also indicated that it had probiotics. So if you believe in the survival of the fittest model, the concept was that those that drank and ate fermented foods lived longer. There might be a reason that we're so attracted to carbonated foods in the first place. So like the word soda is kind of like a bad term now, but I think back in the day, it was actually an indication of a healthy beverage, huh, like kombucha.
So why is, why is kombucha good for us?
You know, it's not, first of all, I want to make sure up front we talk about the fact that it's a food. Mm-hmm. So it's not a drug or a supplement. And I wouldn't indicate this at all as something that you're going to expect some kind of like a medical response from. I would view it more like a bag of carrots or yogurt than anything else. So it's good for us because it's real food, first of all. And it's good for us because it's fermented. And fermented foods are starting to show strong science, basically through science. It's suggesting that the probiotics probably are affecting us, and those probiotics basically live in our gut. To give you a sense, probiotics, the definition of a probiotic just means friendly bacteria or yeast. And when we say friendly, what we mean is they live in our gut and they create some kind of a beneficial impact to us instead of a negative bacteria, which might be called a pathogen. So these positive flora are meant to live in our gut. In fact, there should be more in there than there are stars in the Milky Way, which is pretty crazy when you think about it. That's a lot. And we've done a really good job of depleting these buggers through all the dead food that we eat and then all of the like sterilized water that we drink. So it just constantly is depleting this flora. So we more than ever before are finding that we have to replenish these probiotics. And like, it's something our ancestors maybe didn't have to think about as much, because they weren't depleting their flora so much. And then also because they were already eating fermented foods, even though they didn't know it. You know, real pickles are actually fermented cucumbers. So things like that were already being, you know, real marinara sauce. Those things are actually fermented over time. So anyway, long story short is we're finding that probiotics really help people feel better overall, and that real probiotics exist in fermented foods like yogurt, like kombucha, like sauerkraut, like kimchi. So we think that it makes you feel good because of that. And then also there's the organic acids that develop in fermentation. I don't know if you have any friends that take shots of apple cider vinegar, but it's the same concept. These vinegars and acids that develop in fermentation actually, you know, aid your digestion, aid your detox process in your body. So it makes you feel good. So it's sort of like bubbles with benefits. and it's not just, whereas like a soda is just sugar. It's just for taste. There's no other value to a soda besides that.
Well, the whole fermented food movement has been so fascinating. I was in Minneapolis a few months ago, I guess now, for the Future Food Tour that we're doing. And I went to this bar called the Gist Fermentation Bar. And it would blow your mind. You would be so happy if you walked in there. It's run by two sisters, and everything in there is fermented. They've got pickles. They've got shots of kimchi liquid. They've got kombucha. They just had everything that was fermented was there, and they do fermentation classes. And I just love the place. I was like, this is so cool. I wish there was one in my backyard. But if you go to Minneapolis, you have to check it out, because I think you in particular would be really tickled by that. But one of the things I want to talk to you about today was less kombucha and more money. Because everybody out there in the Bomb Squad, I always describe the Bomb Squad as everybody is either an entrepreneur or entrepreneurial leaning. And one of the big things we've been talking a lot about is funding. How to get your business funded, how to get it off the ground. And your story is so fascinating. And I have to, before you launch into it, I always assume, because I read that you had a corporate background and you'd worked in the pharmaceutical business, that you just worked for years, socked away all your funds, and then launched HealthAid with that money. But that is not true. Right?
No, that's not true.
So you weren't a super duper senior executive or CEO of some company. You were kind of a lower level employee, right?
Yeah. No, I started at the very bottom in an entry level position and worked there 5 years. So it wasn't like I made it much. I mean, I was working my way up. Mm-hmm. I made it into a management role, like where I had, you know, but it was the first level management role. So no, I wasn't like not even making six figures, totally not senior at all. No real say, or I didn't have any like strategic control over anything with the company.
I'm going to use that. I had no strategic control over anything. So tell us, how and why you decided you've got this job, you know, you're married, you've got a nice life, but you decide you're going to do this other thing.
Yeah. Well, I often look back at that time and I'm like, good Lord, child, what were you missing? Because I really did have a good life. You know, I mean, I had enough money to live the life I wanted, and I worked out all the time, and I was able to cook, because I had time and energy. So in a lot of ways, it was a very sort of like, you know, balanced life of maybe what you'd want. But I don't know what to say. It just wasn't fulfilling. And I was, you know, in the in the beginning, it was a quiet voice, but then over those 5 years, it grew louder. And that voice was telling me this just wasn't meant for me. And there was something else I had to do. And I felt a real drive toward starting a business. I had no idea what that was going to be. It wasn't like some kind of epiphany from God or something saying, you are going to start a kombucha company. It was way less clear than that. But what was clear is that this drive was there. And, it took 5 years for me to do anything about it. No question that in those 5 years, a lot of it just had to be, was just me building the confidence to actually realize I could do it. And I had everything it took, even though I didn't have money. And there were a million excuses of why I shouldn't have done it. I think one of the things I'd like to impart on others, now that I've gotten past that step, is to help them get through that faster, because certainly staying there 5 years wasn't necessary. It wasn't productive. And, I don't think we need to wait that long to go follow our dreams.
Mm-hmm. And little known fact, you were originally thinking about doing something related to hair loss, and it just happened to involve kombucha.
Yeah. So I think people expect, because, I have my background in nutrition and that I started a kombucha company, that like I'm really passionate about kombucha. And it's true that I am passionate about kombucha, but no more than I'm passionate about like a strawberry. I mean, I just love real food. That's what I'm passionate about. But the reason we started Health Aid wasn't because I was like sitting on this incredible recipe and I had to share it with the world. I'd learned how to make kombucha long before Health Aid. It was in graduate school, even before the pharma sales company. I made all kinds of foods at home, sprouted all kinds of things, fermented all kinds of things because I was into that. And that's where I landed on kombucha, and I loved it and I drank it all the time. But I had no idea it was going to be like my business career / identity 10 years down the road. So what happened when I talked to you just a little while ago about that voice, I shared, of course, how I was feeling, this feeling of unfulfillment, with my best friend and my husband. And they were sort of feeling the same way in their own jobs, which was kind of cool because we had something in common there. And so we decided to get together once a week, and we called it an entrepreneur club. And we would just talk about, you know, what business we might start. One of the major things against us was that we only had about like $600 each to put toward the project. We certainly did not have like a huge savings account here, but we had a lot of drive and a lot of creative ideas. And again, just that feeling of unfulfillment was what took us there. And these ideas may or may not have had anything to do with food. Like, I was passionate about food, but Justin and Vanessa weren't necessarily. We were definitely all passionate about starting something, though, and working for ourselves and building it from scratch.
And those are your co-founders.
So the hair loss idea was where it all started. Justin was losing his hair. He was going bald, and he didn't want to be going bald because he's 28, and, you know, he wanted to, like, protect that. And, so basically, long story short is we started researching what would regrow hair, and we find that the SCOBY, it was appropriate that you started the call with that, because the SCOBY is used in parts of the world as like a mask on the head, and it's meant to like regrow hair. So we were going to make a bunch of these SCOBYs in order to use on Justin's head to see if it would actually work. In order to make a SCOBY, you have to make kombucha, and I, of course, know how to make kombucha. So I start making a ton of kombucha, not for the liquid, for the SCOBY, and it was ultimately going to be used on Justin's head. After a few weeks of making a ton of kombucha, it started to overtake my apartment. I couldn't drink enough of it, so I started giving it out. And we had a friend who worked at a farmer's market, a really good one in LA, like one you don't say no to. She knew, because she was a friend of ours, what we were working on, called us and said, hey, I've got an opening at the farmer's market for your hair loss product. You could sell it for the summer. And we didn't have the hair loss product ready yet. We hadn't even used it on Justin. We were still cultivating these things. But I did have like 60 cases of unlabeled kombucha. So really, that's where it started. It wasn't meant to be kombucha. It was meant to be the hair loss thing. And then it was through the farmers markets that we learned, how much demand there was for our product, how good our product was to others, how much people loved it. And so we pivoted after like just a couple months. We just totally abandoned the hair loss idea and went with the kombucha. So it wasn't even meant to be kombucha. Of course, we make it the real way, and we care so much about that. So I applied all those same values I always had to food to our kombucha. And I think that's one of the reasons it's done so well. But yeah,
It wasn't meant to be kombucha.
Now, you went very quickly from one farmer's market to multiple farmer's markets to not even being able to keep up with the demand.
Yeah. I mean, Justin, Vanessa, and I, we're a certain type of breed. And it's not the only way to run a business. So I want to be very clear that there are other right ways to do it. For us, we're turbo mode people. I always say, like, we don't know. Like, we're either sprinting or we're freaking hanging out on the beach having margaritas. There's no in-between for us. So, you know, we shared that similar work ethic, and we applied it to, like, every waking hour. So, yeah, we didn't just, like, you know, we did one farmer's market maybe three times, and then we're like, okay, let's do two, let's do four, let's do seven, let's do 17. And it, you know, we just pushed it so hard because we wanted that. We wanted to prove that we could do this.
How were you handling hiring back then? Because obviously you needed to hire people to help you.
Yeah. Well, in the beginning, I mean, luckily we did have three people, right? So me, Justin, and Vanessa, and that's an important thing to consider, especially for single founders, because at the beginning, especially, it's just work that has to get done by smart people. It's not like all that specialized yet. But it does take work, and having three was very helpful because we didn't have to pay ourselves in the beginning. We all still kept our jobs. And we just worked nights, weekends, and any waking hour we could. So that was really helpful. And I think it is a challenge to overcome as a single founder, how you do find those initial dollars to hire somebody to help you in the beginning. But yes, we couldn't do 17 farmers markets, just the three of us. So, I mean, we relied a lot on like Craigslist ads and, you know, part-time friends that wanted to make $150 on a Sunday to help us sell this. And even our first sales reps, we put an ad out on Craigslist.
Wow. Okay.
And we didn't pay them like hourly or salary. We paid them as independent sales reps. So
I thought you were going to say I thought you were going to say you paid them in kombucha.
Well, we did a little bit. It was like we put an ad out saying, "Hey, if you love Health Aid, contact us. We'll give you free kombucha," and then also, for every account you open, you'll get some kind of, you know, monetary amount, and then you'll get 10% of your sales when the money comes in. So we were able to get people to help us open stores and work for us without needing to pay them by the hour in the beginning. Now, it's not something you can sustain for long because it's a lot of management to do it like this. You get high turnover, so it's like a lot of inefficiency. But for us, because we had no money, that was the only way we could do it. I couldn't afford to hire somebody. I didn't have any money. And all the money we were making from the farmers markets was going right back into buying bottles, tea, sugar. And no, we were not paying ourselves in the beginning.
You decided to quit your job, which was a pretty scary moment. How did you have the confidence to do that?
Well, I didn't really have confidence to do that, but I did it anyway. And I think... I think that's sort of been a theme in business. You sort of know you have to do it. You're scared as hell, but you know you have to do it. That feeling is something that has continued throughout business. And it started, I think, with that. It wasn't that scary to start selling in the farmers markets because we had our jobs still. So it was more fun and exciting. The real fear came in at the end of the first year when we decided to jump ship from our secure jobs. And it was scary. It was the scariest thing I've ever had to do. And I don't know what to tell you except that we knew, and this is why our tagline is follow your gut. So much intuitively you already know. But at the end of the year, we knew that we could not make Health Aid. Like, we knew Health Aid was selling like hotcakes. It was really exciting. Everybody wanted it. There were lines down the farmers market. There was a real buzz. That happened in large part because we pushed it. But we knew that, like, we were also hitting a brick wall. Like, we couldn't keep working 24 hours a day like that. And plus, it was so inefficient the way we were running it. We just knew that if we really wanted this thing to blow up like we knew it could, we were going to have to put our full-time hours and attention to it, period.
Now, Dinah, so can I butt in for one sec? Are you willing to tell that American Express card story? Because I know you're going to make a lot of small business people out there feel a lot better knowing what you went through.
100%. I'll share anything. the end of that first year, and American Express story hadn't happened yet, but the end of the first year, we quit you know, showed up January 1st of 2013, like, oh, schnikes, we do not have any dollars coming in now at all, right, because we don't have our jobs. And it suddenly turned the turbo mode into, like, hyper turbo. And we just, you know, cut what we needed. We cut our personal expenditures significantly and just drove the business. But I will say, because we had the time and the bandwidth, that was where the business really grew. So, like, in the first 3-4 months of that year, we went from being in 7 stores to 300 stores. And we were able to create such a strong buzz because we were working toward it. And we were able to solve problems, you know, because we had the bandwidth. So, anyway, we got into this place where we were using our credit card and the money from the farmers markets and the money from the stores, and we were kind of making things happen. And then we got into one really big grocery store. We got into Gelson's. And no longer was it a 16-case order or 20-case order. It was now like a 600-case order. And that was like pretty significant for us. Now, we made everything to order. So it wasn't like, you know, we didn't have any problem with producing it. We just needed time, which they were going to give us. It was more that the dollars we needed to spend on making these orders happen was now way more significant than what we had. Like, we were no longer in this kind of like nice little flux. So suddenly, heavy burden on cash required. We maxed out our credit card. Amex calls us in July, or we call Amex and we're like, oh, they'll be nice. They'll give us an extra credit increase because we've been paying our credit line every month. And they're like, no, not only will we not give it to you, you know, we're going to shut off your card until you pay this one in full because you've been at max, you know, too long, even though we had paid it by the end of the month each month. And we were like, wait, what? So, you know, almost like music turned down all the way to zero. And we thought the whole thing was going to shut down the company because I had nothing. We had nothing to buy a bottle with. And that was when we really realized we, in our position, needed dollars, needed investment to keep growing at this rate if we were going to, you know, keep expanding. And by the way, we had like Whole Foods already knocking on our door at that point. So from a sales perspective and from an external perspective, everyone thought we were on fire. And we were from that perspective. But what no one really knew or saw was that the finances, the dollars, were just not, we couldn't keep up with them. The ones that would be required to keep this kind of level of growth going. So, yeah, that was a real moment. And that was when we realized we needed investment.
So, Dinah, let's jump forward to today, because you are still on fire and the brand has just had incredible growth. So can you just give us a snapshot of how things are today?
Sure. So we're sold in 15,000 stores nationwide. We're the fastest growing brand in the category. The category of kombucha is the fastest growing category in beverage. It's outpaced definitely what people expected it to, but most other beverages as well. So it's outpacing the speed of coconut water, cold pressed juice, many of the other beverages that are kind of hot. Kombucha's at the top. And as I mentioned, we're the fastest growing brand. And we're not just the fastest growing brand of all the brands. We're actually the top three brand as well. So doing very well from a performance standpoint. We'll sell over 35 million bottles this year. We have 200 amazing employees. That is the true reason that we've been successful, not just the liquid, but the people. 200 people, and Justin, Vanessa, and I still operate the business. We obviously have help from other executives, but we still operate it. I'm CEO, he's COO, she's CSO, she runs sales. And yeah, it's been pretty amazing journey, not just from a business side, but from a personal side as well, considering we started with no experience, but just a drive.
Do you have a mantra?
It changes. I don't think I'm like a one mantra type of gal. But follow your gut is not just the tagline for our product. I mentioned it in the beginning, like, because we didn't come from a business space and we didn't have a lot of money, so much of this journey has been about that, following your intuition, not knowing what to do, but oddly knowing what to do. And going with a notion anyway, like you had mentioned, how did you have confidence to do that? Well, so many times I didn't have confidence, but I went for it anyway, because I kind of knew I had to. So follow your gut, I would say, is the closest thing we have to a mantra.
Well, that's great. I also saw on your website that you wrote, our ultimate mission is to be the champion of the happiest and healthiest you. And I thought that was great. You know, you don't see that often from brands. You know, the fact that you want us to be healthy and happy means a lot. So on behalf of your fans, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And I think those are the same. I mean, what I want to really impart on the world is more than just a great kombucha, right? I mean, I think my point is that happy is healthy and happy and healthy is happy. And nobody can tell you when you're healthy, just like nobody can tell you if you're happy. You know that. And my whole goal is to get people more in touch with their own selves, because that's how we can create really great businesses or great moves in life, when we're tapping into what our brains are bringing up. And I don't want to keep looking to the outside for that. I think that's a mistake. So the first step is getting people to realize they know the version of themselves that's happiest and healthiest, and that's what we want to help you do.
That's awesome.
To be that person.
Well, Dinah, thank you for your time, and thank you for being so, you've been so supportive of Cherry Bomb and women in this industry, so I have to thank you for that as well. And I don't know if you heard who our next guest is, but it's Christine Barone, who is the CEO of True Food Kitchen, and she heard me mention your name, and she said, oh, we sell healthy kombucha at True Food Kitchen. And I was like, of course you do.
Yes, they do, and I absolutely love the restaurant, the venue, everything it stands for. And I frequent it at least twice a month with my son and husband. So one of my favorite places to go.
Well, I'm so bummed. I haven't been to one yet, but I need to find one in this area and get to one. But Christine's going to tell us all about it. So anyway, she said hello and she looks forward to meeting one day. And she's waving from the control booth right now. So virtual wave.
Awesome. We'll tell her I said hello too.
All right. Well,
nice
Dinah,
to talk, Carrie.
You're the bomb. So take care. All right, everybody.
Okay, bye.
We'll be right back with Christine after these messages from our sponsors. It's time for our Bob's Red Mill Minute. If you're in the Bomb Squad, you know all about Bob's. I almost said Bob Squad, which I guess is appropriate. We're all in the Bob Squad, right? Anyway, Bob's is the employee-owned company that offers the best flours, grains, and baking ingredients out there. We've been serving a gluten-free lemon loaf cake at Smith Canteen, my coffee shop in Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn, and the moist, citrusy slices of the lemon loaf have been a big hit. Our baker, Gabby Vigoro, came up with the recipe based on a classic French yogurt cake that she adapted to be gluten-free. It contains Bob's Superfine Almond Flour, which is made from blanched almonds, and Bob's gluten-free all-purpose baking flour. The other ingredients include yogurt, lemon juice, and almond extract, plus a special lemon sugar that Gabby makes by rubbing lemon juice and lemon zest right into the sugar. The loaf cake slices are really wonderful with an espresso, and our guests love that it's gluten-free. If you are in Carroll Gardens, stop by Smith Canteen for a slice and say hi to me and Gabby. Thanks to Bob's Red Mill for making the best products around and for being the best friend a baker could have. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and patisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. Welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. We're here with Christine Barone. She is the CEO of True Food Kitchen, a really hot restaurant chain that is expanding across the country. They have 23 restaurants in 10 different cities. And as I mentioned earlier, they have a brand new investor and board member, and it is the one and only Oprah Winfrey, which is hugely exciting. This is your first time on Radio Cherry Bomb. It's our first time meeting. So Christine, welcome, and thanks for being here.
Carrie, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
So you are based in Phoenix?
Arizona.
Phoenix. So what brings you to New York?
We're actually on a family vacation.
This isn't much of a vacation. This is kind of work, although it's fun and you get to hang out here and have pizza afterward. But before you all emailed me, I really didn't know anything about True Food Kitchen. You're not in New York just yet.
We are not in New York.
Right.
Not
you have to open a location here. And the whole premise at True Food Kitchen is that it is based on Dr. Andrew Weil's, and let's see if I get this right, anti-inflammatory food pyramid.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you have to explain what the heck that's all about. So over to you.
So Dr. Andrew Weil is one of our founders and is really still quite involved in the business. He helps us a lot with finding ingredients, and his entire life has really been dedicated to finding kind of a life well lived, and that nice balance between food and wellness and your environment. And so when you walk into a True Food Kitchen, it starts with the environment that you find first. So really relaxing, lots of natural woods and lighter colors. We always look for locations that have at least two different angles of light, so that when you're sitting down for lunch, you have a beautiful just environment that you're eating your meal in. And then the food and the anti-inflammatory pyramid. So Dr. Weil's basis, all his research has been based on how do we reduce inflammation with our bodies. So very similar to like when you get a cut on your body and you kind of inflame a little bit around that, that happens inside of our bodies as well when we're not feeding ourselves the way that we should be. And so True Food is very much based on this. And what it comes down to is we have a very, very heavy plant-based menu with some proteins as well, but lots of fresh in-season ingredients. Everything that we do is made from scratch in the kitchen. We have cocktails to lots of different entrees and sandwiches, so a really wide range of menu items, but all based on this philosophy.
I have the menu open right now, and it's making me very, very hungry, and I really wish there was one here. You've got the Inside Out Quinoa Burger. What makes it inside out?
So the burger itself is actually just the toppings within, and the bun we actually make out of two quinoa patties. That's how it's an inside out quinoa burger.
Oh, fun.
So there's no burger involved.
Oh, gosh. Okay. And you've got cashew pad thai. You've got teriyaki quinoa. You've got spaghetti squash casserole, which sounds amazing.
Yeah. And our new tacos. Korean noodle salad, which is delicious. And I know your last guest was talking a lot about fermented food. So that salad actually has a sweet potato noodle. And
those are so popular right now. I met someone who was talking about them and swore that that was like the secret to, I bumped in somebody and he looked great. He had lost weight and he just seemed like a lot more luminous than he had been the last time I saw him. And he said, you know, I've kind of changed my diet. I eat a lot of these sweet potato glass noodles. And there you go.
So absolutely. So we now have a summer salad, the Korean noodle salad that has those glass noodles. And we also have kimchi cucumbers, which are a fermented cucumber.
That sounds good. I have the description right here. So it's got the glass noodles, bok choy, kale, cucumber kimchi, mango, bean sprout, and almond lime vinaigrette. Sounds really nice.
All that we're making, cutting, slicing in-house. I love True Food. One of my favorite times is like 7 a.m. in the morning, and you walk into our restaurant. It's actually as busy as it is at lunch, even though we have no guest. And the reason for that is that's when we're prepping all of our food. We actually put our prep blocks in front. So most restaurants, prep is in the very back of the restaurant. But because of how we are running our restaurants, we actually put it right in the front. And so you get to see.
So before you open, you do all the prep?
Well, and we do it throughout the day too. So when you come into the restaurant, you actually get to see your food being cut and sliced and diced and all those beautiful vegetables coming in through the door.
Oh, that's so interesting. I think some of us are going to steal that idea from you, because why, when you have beautiful food and you're buying all this, these ingredients from a farmer's market and all these different sources, why the hell hide it behind a wall?
And not only that, not only do you get to see it, but you also get to smell it, right? And so those smell, all of, we have refreshers, which are some non-alcoholic based drinks that have all fresh squeezed juices. And so you get to see all of that happening right in front of you at True Food.
You know, it's so interesting because I was thinking you and Dinah really represent this new breed of CEO, you know, who you're way more focused not just on the bottom line, you're focused on making sure that your customers are happy and healthy and having these great experiences. And this morning, I interviewed a young woman named Mary Ellis Bunn, who is one of the founders of the Museum of Ice Cream. Have you heard about this?
I have heard, but I have not had the pleasure of going.
So she was incredible and similarly really focused on happiness and the customer experience. And I feel like you women are really changing, you know, women like you and Dinah and Mary Ellis are kind of changing the industry.
Yeah.
And of course there's a bottom line focus, because you can't have a business if you're not focused on the bottom line, but it doesn't just have to be the bottom line anymore.
Yeah. I actually think that we are in a world where there's so much more transparency than there was, and that's a great thing. And I think what that's doing is that it really makes businesses that are focused on having just an awesome experience, and that when you come in, not only do you have a meal, but you actually feel like maybe you learned a little something or you tried a new vegetable. And I think that that's what we should all demand from the businesses that we do business with, is that we want them to be great and focused on providing us awesome experiences. And I think that hopefully naturally does flow to the bottom line. But again, I think that being focused on the top line is absolutely the right place to be, and focused on making your guest happy.
Now, it does not surprise me that that is your philosophy, because you worked at Starbucks for a while.
I did.
And I know that is a big thing for Howard Schultz, who just stepped down, right?
Yeah.
From Starbucks. But that, any interview I ever heard with him or read with him, he was always talking about not just being focused on the bottom line, but being focused on the guest experience. And I'm guessing that was, you were pretty senior when you left Starbucks.
I was, yeah.
Tell us what the last role you had there.
So I was the senior vice president of food, licensed stores, and evenings. And
I loved the evenings part when I saw that in your bio.
So lots of things there. But what I primarily did is I ran the food business for the U.S. and Canada. And a really interesting perspective to get to see what so many people were eating every day and the types of questions they were asking. And I think that, you know, I'm surprised, I have three children, and I look at just how much more they know about food and than I did when I was growing up. And I think that we are luckily training lots of our guests and lots of our consumers to know more about what they eat and what they put in their bodies.
Do you know Kim Malik from Salt and Straw?
I have met her once,
did,
but I don't know her well.
Yeah,
we didn't happen to overlap.
She's great, but I was just thinking of all these Starbucks alums who are out there. And before we go back to True Food Kitchen, is Howard Schultz going to run for president?
I have no idea.
As an ex-Starbucks employee, if you had to guess.
I would be hopeful.
Maybe he can run with Oprah. Can you work on that?
I'll try.
That would be the best thing ever. Okay, back to True Food Kitchen, because that's why we lured you in here. So what are your plans for the... Oh, you know what I wanted to talk about? I read another thing that I had never... a phrase I'd never seen, conscious casual. That's what you call the kind of dining at True Food Kitchen.
Yeah.
Because a lot of us have seen fast casual, fast fine, there are all these terms now, but this is the first time I saw conscious casual.
Yeah, so I think that the way that we are approaching food and the industry is a little different. There's actually a lot of, I think, health-focused players in that purely fast casual space. We're actually a sit-down restaurant with a bar, but we kind of have you come as you are into the restaurant, so hence the conscious casual. So we want to do the thinking for you about the food, so you can think, you don't have to think when you can come in. You can just relax and be yourself. And we really have just a range of folks coming into the restaurant. So we'll have folks who come in after yoga class, but then we'll also have, we have had engagements in the restaurant. And so that conscious casual piece means really kind of come as you are and let us do the thinking for you about the food so you can feel good about anything you put in your body.
Oh, that's awesome. You've had engagements there? That's always sweet.
I love that.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So how did the Oprah investment come about?
So I think, like many of us, including myself, she found us first as a guest and discovered True Food Kitchen through Bob Green, who's her trainer and business associate. And Bob introduced her to our restaurant. She tried the food. She came back in and dined with us again. And then I got a call to see if I wanted to have lunch with her at her house.
And you said no.
And I said, oh, my goodness, of course. I can't wait. So...
That's cool. Tell us what that was like.
Really wonderful. And what I loved is I think how I fell in love with True Food and just seeing the environment. I'd actually saved the menu. So when they called me about the potential opportunity, I had it sitting on my desk behind me. So just had fallen in love. And what I loved is what she was describing to me about True Food was, I think, what so many of us who work at True Food see. About True. So just, she loved the community that had come into the restaurant. She, of course, loved the food. And I think, like many of our guests, she already had learned to customize her dishes. So because we make every single thing from scratch, we can actually take things out, add things in. And we work with lots of different types of food allergies or lifestyle choices. And I think she saw all of those special things that made up True Food. And it was absolutely... It's got to be the best lunch in my life.
So what are the plans for expansion?
So we have doubled in size in the last 2 years and plan to double in size again within the next 3 years. So we should end the year at about $170 million in revenue. So pretty, we like to describe ourselves as a very large startup. And because we still have that great atmosphere, lots of smiles, huge amount of passion inside our office of what we're trying to do.
That's a lot of growth. Will you come to New York?
So I
know it's
actively looking for spots in New York. And I think the challenge is we're really thoughtful about the service experience that we have. And so we need to find the right space. Again, trying to come into New York and say, I need a space with two lights and I need to be this big and this. So we're going to have to be thoughtful about, we may not be able to have quite as big of a kitchen as we do in other places, but we are definitely starting to think about what we might do. Mm-hmm. And as I've been building out my team to run True Food, I actually have a lot of folks who are kind of veterans to the fine dining scene here. So our COO came from John George, and our brand chef came from Danielle Ballou. So we have a lot of folks who are very familiar with the food scene here and excited to come back here one day.
So let's talk about you. I'm so thrilled that today's show we have two CEOs. I mean, I really can't even tell you that, because just given what's been going on in the world over the past, I don't know, forever, yeah. But also the past year, and so much talk about more women needing to run companies and own their own companies. And so just to have two of you on the show is really special. So I just wanted to say that. Did you always know that you would be a CEO one day? Did you
Absolutely.
Dream of that?
No, I didn't. What I would share is, I think I've never had a plan per se, but I've always thought about what I want to be learning and how much I can learn every day. And so I think that's kind of guided me. And people laugh at me when I say, they're like, well, how do you make these decisions? I say, I actually think a lot about what I most want to do Monday morning. And so when you wake up in the morning and you're so super excited to go do that next thing, I think you're more successful when you're doing something that you love. And so that's always guided me. Now, I certainly have had a career that's kind of built up to this role. And so that learning journey, I actually started as an investment banker. And so an odd place to kind of wind up. But I think that serves you very well as a CEO to have a really solid financial foundation so that you do understand kind of how to make sure everything works. I have 3,000 employees now. And so I just feel that the incredible weight of that responsibility. And to your earlier point, although I'm very focused on the top line, I know that I owe it to those 3,000 people who come into work every day to make sure I'm also focused on the bottom line.
Do you, I want to start asking everybody who comes on the show
yeah.
this, do you have a finance tip? Not like a hot stock, but just like something you've learned over the years that has helped you in terms of getting your finances in order, being smarter financially?
Yeah, I think what I have learned and observed is I think finance feels scary, and it's actually not. And so I was a math major in college, so very comfortable with numbers. And what I see is that because people saying, oh, I'm not good at math, or I'm not great with numbers, and then a little bit shying away from it, when really, like, my business is actually pretty simple. I bring in some money in the top line, I pay folks to come to work, I pay for some fruits and vegetables to come in the door, and then I have a few other expenses. And it's really like when you actually think of your business a little bit more simplistically, I think it's easier to understand, because those are the big things that matter. And so what I would say from a financial tip is just don't be scared. Go face it head on, and it's actually break it down to make it simple, and it makes it easier.
Now, how about an organizational tip in terms of staying organized? Because you've got 3,000 employees, but then you've got three kids, and some days probably feels harder to have three kids than 3,000 employees, I'm guessing.
I share with my team all the time. I'm probably the one who needs the organizational tips. And so I make sure that there's lots of folks around me who can help me with that, because it's certainly not my strong set. But again, like I always try and think through, well, how do I think of this in the simplest way? Or like, what am I actually trying to do? And I find in even running a large business that the things that actually will get done, you can't do that many things. So if you don't have your three things in mind that are super important, you won't get them done. And it's great to have a list of 30, but 30 things probably don't matter, and you'll never get 30 done. So kind of keeping it simple again as to what actually will make my guest most happy. And I always try and think through, okay, what are ways that we need to think about this? So everything we do in the restaurant, I say, will this make a server at my table more proud of True Food and more proud to talk about our guest? And if so, it's the right decision. And if not, it's absolutely the wrong decision. And when I get it wrong, I want to make sure people will tell me so that we can change it. So I think that, you know, again, just thinking through, like, what is really at the core of what I'm trying to do here, and how do I make it simple?
That's great. One last thing. I read a cute thing about you online. I want to see if it's true. You do grow your own fruits and vegetables.
I do.
But that you only grow enough kale to have one salad a month.
Yes. I have lots of visitors to my garden that I haven't figured out an organic way to not keep them there. So they eat half my kale and we eat half the kale. But what's really fun is, I think having three kids and having them very connected to what they eat is important to me. And so although it's only one kale salad a month, what I get to do is pick my kale, and I have a lemon tree in the backyard so I can squeeze lemons, the perks of being in Phoenix, Arizona. And so it is not a beautiful garden, but it's there.
But hey, you have a backyard.
I do.
I don't have a backyard. Well, that's wonderful. And I can't wait to try True Food Kitchen. I have to look at the map and see where you are, because...
Well, we're in Austin.
You are. Oh, perfect. Okay.
So Monday. I will give you a card.
Monday.
We'll find you.
I'm going to go. I will find you. All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. It was wonderful to meet you. And I hope we stay in touch and get to talk more, because I feel like you're going to be a really important member of the Bomb Squad. So.
Oh, Carrie, thank you so much. Really awesome to be here.
Thanks. So thank you, Christine. Thank you to Dinah Trout of Health Aid Kombucha. And thanks to our sponsors, Bob's Red Mill, the best friend of every baker we know, and Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. You can subscribe to our show wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can subscribe to Cherry Bomb Magazine at cherrybomb.com. Our theme song is by the band Tra La La, and our producer is the one and only DJ Dave Tatasciore. Don't forget, our new issue with Nigella Lawson is on sale right now, and our week-long celebration of ice cream, CB Scoop, is live right now at cherrybomb.com. And we are adding new content every day, so check it out. If you have any cool ice cream adventures this summer, tag us at CB Scoop, hashtag CB Scoop. And this weekend, go check out Health Aid Kombucha if you see it on a shelf, and look on the True Food website and see if there is a True Food kitchen near you. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb. Boys and girls are on fire. Boys and girls are on fire.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.
Hi, I'm Moxie Rosenblum. My dad, Harry Rosenblum, hosts Feast Your Ears on Heritage Radio Network. Right now, HRN is having a summer membership drive. Becoming a member is so easy, and you'll help support shows like my dad's. You can sign up for a one-time donation or become a monthly sustaining member by visiting heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Let's keep food radio on the airwaves this summer.